Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, fellow Star Wars fans, to the little slice of heaven we call Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast here on the Nerd Party Network that explores Star Wars from a slightly different point of view. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me is my dear friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, why don't you say hi to everybody?
I'm just a slice of heaven because I thought that the only place to get that was Dex's Diner.
Dex's Diner is contained within the Star Wars universe, and we are frequenters of Dex's Diner.
That's true. That's true.
Actually,
right.
if there's a real world analogous thing to Dex's Diner, I actually live relatively close to it,
and
the food is unbelievable.
You know, really funny you say that. I actually have a place that's not far from me as well called the Stardust Diner, and it really is one of those like chrome rounded buildings just like it.
Bob and Edith's is not like that. Neither is the Route 29 diner, but like they are, oh my gosh. I mean, it's like you can't even believe how much it's sort of like Al Bundy cooking with last year's ashes when he's, you know, doing the grilling. Yes. That's sort of what the whole mystique is of their food. It's truly wonderful.
Well, and in any of those places, you just expect that there is a basilisk in the back working, and it wouldn't be all that weird to see one.
No, it wouldn't. And that's the one thing is, okay, you notice you never see Obi-Wan actually eat at Dex's Diner.
No, he does drink the Jamba Juice, though. So,
yeah.
Yeah, he didn't order food. He just ordered a drink. We know how Obi-Wan likes a drink.
Yeah, I know, but does Obi-Wan know something that the patrons don't? Like, it's like, you want some food? No, I'm good. I'm just here to talk true. To Dex.
You want some Jamba Juice? They know it because that's all he's going to drink there.
Good. Yeah. It's good.
Well, they use that really nice Nabooian vodka in the Jamba Juice. Yeah. So it's really nice.
I still insist that they should call it Naboobian.
Naboobian, hey. Yeah. That would be good, too. So
it would. But speaking of delectable things that you can get, of course, we would be remiss, and we hate being remiss, as we've well established here, in not mentioning partner and sponsor of the Nerd Party Network and Aggressive Negotiations in specific, Loot Crate. Go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY. Get a special discount on a box of goodies that gets sent to you once a month. Geek heaven in a box sent to you. Lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY. Help yourself, help the show. Get a gift subscription for somebody. You'll really be glad you did here in the holiday season.
You keep mentioning that gift subscription. I don't, is that a wink to somebody?
I am, you know, my voice is carrying out through the waves. Maybe someone's getting a hint.
Anyone.
Somewhere out there, Matt. Yes, please. I don't know how much more obvious I can be. But that brings us to this week's question. We're going down a road. Last week, we examined the question of Qui-Gon. What would have happened had he lived? And that spurred some thoughts about some more alternative history takes on it, still prequel-based.
So is this like the Kelvin timeline for Star Wars?
Potentially. It could be, yes. Okay. In this version of it, Qui-Gon's still dead. Everything has transpired through Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith up to a certain point. The decision point that I want us to look at is there's a specific decision made in Revenge of the Sith where Yoda says to Obi-Wan, you go after Anakin, I'll take care of the Emperor. And they go their separate ways. And of course, there's the whole symbolic balance. One loses, one wins, balances achieve that way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I was thinking about this just to get the ball rolling. What if Yoda had said, you know what? Leave Anakin on Mustafar. You come with me. We're both going to take on the Emperor. And when we defeat him, the person who has consolidated all of this power in this new government to himself specifically, with no clear succession plan, once we wipe him out, we can end this empire, and it doesn't matter if Anakin's there. We're waiting for him. We've got control of the government again, the whole apparatus. So let's postulate a timeline where that happens, where Obi-Wan and Yoda go to face the Emperor. Do you see them winning in that scenario? And if so, how do you see it playing out?
Well, that's such an interesting question, because earlier in the film, they go up against Dooku, and Obi-Wan gets dispatched pretty easily. And it's a little bit disturbing, because then, of course, he takes down Grievous by himself, which nobody's been able to do in the Clone Wars, and except for the Gungans. I mean, let's give the Gungans their due here. They
Captain Tarple.
They kicked his ass. So,
yes.
And yeah, if they hadn't had to give him back, he was a goner. But so, and it always made me wonder if Palpatine had something to do with Obi-Wan getting taken out so easily
under
the table, because the next time that we see him, he's fighting Grievous, fine. And then he's able to take down Anakin Skywalker, which is presumably the most powerful being Jedi ever to exist. And so, which, you know, I think the novelization adds something, and it's in my head canon, that reason that Obi-Wan doesn't do it sooner is because he still has a hope for Anakin, and he has to let go of that love and hope so that he can do what he needs to do.
Well, sure. But, I mean, sort of like all of that aside, I mean, I have my own interpretation of why Dooku is able to pwn Obi-Wan, and that's because Obi-Wan was trained by Qui-Gon, who was trained by Dooku, and Obi-Wan is not a great innovator with, you know, fighting. He's fighting the way he was taught. That doesn't take anything away from him, but Dooku is going to be very familiar with his style. Anakin is much more unorthodox in the way he fights, which is why Dooku would have more trouble with him. Like, if you go up against, it's sort of like when you see a boxing match, two fighters with similar skill sets, you know, it usually ends, you know, one of them can dispatch the other because they know the other's game.
Right.
Whereas somebody who is very unorthodox, that even the established fighter, if he's not prepared for how that other person fights, it's going to throw him off. But all that, you know, all that aside, Obi-Wan has taken out Grievous. Anakin's on Mustafar. Yoda and Obi-Wan decide, let's go face the Emperor. Do you see them winning?
Well, and that's why I brought up the other things, because it played into my answer.
Okay.
And I think if the Obi-Wan that beats Anakin shows up, then he can do it. But I also think that Obi-Wan might have a better chance against the Emperor, just because he doesn't have skin in the game, as in, it's not his brother. This is something he is out to destroy, just like he was out to destroy Grievous. You know, and so we've seen that Obi-Wan can be very resourceful when he needs to be to take down an enemy, especially, again, taking down Grievous. And so I think putting him and Yoda together, they have a good opportunity. Because you have two just very incredible masters at that point. And I would argue probably the greatest Jedi masters of the age. You know, they are the ones who live, so I mean it's hard to argue that. But I think they could take him. I really do.
So if they do, what plays out then? How do you see it playing out? Do you see them waiting for Anakin? Does Anakin manage to rally the troops, as it were? You know, the clone army is turned on the Jedi. So Obi-Wan and Yoda aren't necessarily out of the woods. Like, you know, the clones aren't going to suddenly stop going after the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And there's still that apparatus there. Does Anakin find a way to rally those troops? Are the Jedi able to appeal directly to the people of the galaxy and say, this has been a coup, we need your help, don't trust the soldiers? I'll say for me, it starts the Civil War earlier. Mm-hmm. The civil war that we encounter in episodes 4, 5, and 6, it starts at that point then. Because Obi-Wan and Anakin are able to make a direct appeal. We know that there are still some Jedi, even half-trained, you know, there's still Kanan out there. But even before we know about Kanan, there are still people out there who could rally to their cause.
Heck, there's an Ahsoka out there.
That's true. Ahsoka's out there too. So that's what I see happening, is the Civil War starts at that point as opposed to waiting 20 years.
Okay. Man, this just blew my mind and it just came to me. So what if Obi-Wan and Yoda make a call to Padme and Bail Organa, mm-hmm. hand them the keys to democracy and say, the Senate now needs to elect a new chancellor. We give power back to the people, to the government. But as we do that, hey, let's clean this S up. You know, let's make sure that this doesn't happen again. Maybe they find a way to found a new republic, you know, the new republic. Yeah. We'll call it that.
Okay.
But at the same time, Anakin realizes what's happened. He sees the broadcast from Padme. He feels, rejected, obviously, big time. And he takes control of the clones, and along with, wait for it, Darth Maul, they decide to do their best to destroy this brand new republic, and there's your civil war.
It, very, very interesting, because mentally I still, you know, an admission here, even as somebody who loves the Clone Wars and all the storylines and everything, I don't tend to bring in somebody like Maul by default. To me, like in 2005, when the movie came out, Maul is still dead. Maul didn't survive Naboo until the Clone Wars series. Like that, then it, you know, it's sort of, in a sense, retconned in my brain, where I'm like, oh, okay, he did live after all. Do you see... Okay, so you're bringing in that, and okay, so Maul comes into play. What army does the Republic fight with? I mean, that's the whole thing, is I see this, you know, the Civil War starts, but the clones are still loyal to the, if not Palpatine in specific, then to the Empire / Republic, whatever you want to call it, that he was the head of.
And that's where I think that the military that's not clones comes into play. And so those loyal to the Republic in the military army will then maybe find a way to turn on their clones and you know, take over their venerators and that kind of thing. And that's where you start this whole more ground force put it this way, this kind of grassroots effort for this new fledgling new republic. And that's where things, you get like Saul Guerrera and that kind of military organization and rebellion that's begun on these planets. They're the ones who, continue that fight.
But that's an interesting thought to me, though, is the clones are ordered to turn on the Jedi, sure. But they're not all serving, you know, with Jedi in specific on each ship and everything.
Right.
Would the clones, let's say in your scenario, that because we know in the novelization that Nita is one of he's in the Imperial Navy at this point and he's on a ship. Do the clones, so long as they don't see a Jedi, ignore that order and go along? And you know, so Nita says, no, you're loyal to the Republic. Your Republic soldiers are going to do what I say. Palpatine is dead, and we have to stay loyal to the Senate. Do you see the clones going along with that?
That is a good question, and it makes for an interesting discussion, because I think there's still a lot about the Order 66 and the chip that we don't know. You know, is that a one-time order, and then once that they think it's complete, they can let it go.
Yeah.
You do have a lot of questions there, but I'm suspecting that it is something that if they ever do come across a Jedi, they will think it's their enemy from this point forward, and therefore the clones themselves have to be taken care of. And this would be the start of a all-volunteer army for the New Republic, basically kind of what the United States has now.
Right. So here's a question. Is Anakin is in a place, though, where there are no clones? Does he summon them? Do they go? Do like when he summons them, do they all mutiny on their ships? Does he like would that be his first step in this civil war? Would be, you know, OK, let's presume Obi-Wan and Anakin block transmissions from Mustafar so that Anakin has to climb back in his ship and fly around and sort of go on a ship by ship appeal to the clones and say, you're going to follow me. Let's go along.
Yeah, and that's where I do think that you would really get some interesting things happening, and one of them would be that Anakin does have to find a way to be able to reach out to the clones, and that's where I think the connection between him and Maul come in, because Maul was, we know from the Ahsoka book, he was taken down on...
Yeah, but see, this is the thing is, I don't know if Anakin, without Palpatine there to sort of reinforce his bad decisions, is there a final appeal toward his redemption that can be made? Is there, you know, something where, I mean, Palpatine, so far as we know, has not set up some sort of succession plan where he believes he might die, and therefore he's said to everybody, if I go out, follow Lord Vader. Mm-hmm. We know he sent them to kill the separatists, but he has no, you know, commandos, no soldiers, nobody there with him. Does Anakin have the authority? I mean, wouldn't Palpatine have feared Anakin turning on him and so not given him direct control? But then, of course, that adds on a whole other layer, because years later, Vader is in control of the military.
Right.
But they're no longer clones. They can still, they can still question his orders, and their loyalty can be to Palpatine above him.
I do think that Anakin would not be able to be redeemed. I think the end of 3 is pretty clear that he likes the decision that he's made. Even his wife, the one he said that he loved, he chokes her to death. You know, so he doesn't have a lot of remorse about it either. In fact, he doesn't have any until he realizes
Doesn't he, though? I mean, when he's in the suit, his first thought is of her.
Right.
And he asks how she is.
But that's after that kind of like adrenaline of anger has happened. I don't know if he would feel that if Palpatine was killed and he doesn't have anything to fall back on.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, I would see that maybe there's a redemptive arc here for Anakin earlier, because there's still good in him. Padme even believes, after he, you know, commits his heinous act against her, even Padme is saying there's still good in him. Try to save him. You know, there's somebody good in there still. So Anakin is on Mustafar. The government's in disarray. Everything's going to... Do you think that they send... I mean, this might be where the mistake comes back, is they send Padme to go talk to him. Or would you see Obi-Wan and Yoda saying, look, the clones will still kill us on sight. You guys, you know, we've wiped out the Emperor. You guys got to fix this. We're going to go handle Anakin. And do they try to redeem him at that point?
What?
Because Obi-Wan, as you pointed out in the novelization, and as I think is clear in the movie, Obi-Wan doesn't want to fight him. Obi-Wan still loves him like a brother. Obi-Wan doesn't want to kill him. It's not like Obi-Wan is going there to hurt him. He doesn't want to do that. So Obi-Wan would probably appeal to Yoda and say, let's turn him around. We've got our point here. He's just fallen. Maybe we can pull him back.
That's a good question. And I think that the way to do it is to bring Padme with them. So it's the three of them.
Okay.
And all of them standing together and beckoning him back to the light side. And I think that might have the impact that we're looking for him to turn around and say, oh, son of a gun, what have I done? You know?
Okay, so let's say they do get him to turn. Does he become, let's say he does say, oh gosh, look at what a fool I've been, and he turns it around. Does he then become the way that they can deprogram the clones? Because obviously they've been, well, I mean, it's not even obvious. I'm guessing that the clones have been given, you know, Order 66, but then there's some sort of thing where Palpatine can be like, except for this guy. But,
well, I mean, they maybe 501st marched straight into the Jedi Temple with him and had no problem with it. So
that's true. That's true.
I mean, they were following him just like they always did.
So maybe that becomes their way of taming the clones, for lack of a better phrase, is Anakin, they go back, they can appeal to him, they bring him back, order is restored because he says, hey, y'all, let's chill out here. Let's
and cool. And I think, and this is the thing that I think would be really interesting, is for Anakin to hang up the lightsaber.
Leave the order.
Yes, that he leaves the order, that Obi-Wan and Yoda spend time contemplating traveling the galaxy together, and maybe even picking up Ahsoka, and doing kind of a vision quest to re-find and find a way to reformat the Jedi Order in a way that's different, and so that it's Yoda. And his very last act is not trying to save the Skywalker children, but it's founding a new Jedi Order, one that's not tied to the government, is based right. on a planet, you know, some very, you know, right. life-giving planet, and doing things differently.
So basically, Anakin, in this scenario, still restores balance to the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Leads to the new way of life being established. And I like your idea of hanging up the lightsaber, or maybe like Wyatt Earp, he puts it in a case.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like the peacemaker, and he and Padme go off.
Live on Naboo, raise their kids. You know,
do you see them raising the kids on Naboo, or do you see them raising the kids on Tatooine?
No, he does not like sand. So it's
coarse. It is coarse. It does get everywhere.
And it gets everywhere. Yeah. No, I can see them living in the Lake Country, raising the kids. You know, he's going to be well aware that his children probably are very strong in the Force. I think maybe Luke takes on the same role of becoming a Jedi, and maybe Leia follows her mom into politics. And so...
But see this beautiful, serene thing with the way my brain works is you're setting this up where, okay, hey, he's married his sweetheart, and they're going off, and they're going to build the beautiful life together. And then all of a sudden, in a time machine, crazy Obi-Wan comes back and says,
Anakin,
it's your kids.
You got to do something about your kids.
They turn out to be a-holes. Yeah, and they jump in the DeLorean, and they go back to a galaxy.
Yeah, they jump into the speeder with the right cockpit and the right speed capabilities, you know. And,
that's right.
No, that's hilarious. I love that. But no, I think that, you know, that's the thing that would be so interesting about this whole thought experiment is that, you know, could there have been a moment where they made a different decision and everything changed, you know, because everything comes down to those moments and those decisions and just the way it does in our lives. And what if they had left Anakin to himself for just a little while and taken care of the Emperor? And then if they had to, they could have gone and taken care of Anakin together. And maybe that's just the thing about the Jedi at that point of always expecting, and even Yoda, expecting that they could handle more than they could.
Maybe this leads to a question for another time, but I even wonder, would it be they make the decision to go face the Emperor together, they overcome him, maybe one of them dies in the process, and then either both or whoever's alive goes off, and the Jedi just, they become a legend. And that person just goes off and says, I'm done with the galaxy, I'm out. And there are no real Jedi that we know of after that point. They just go off and they say, you know, on the way out the door. Oh, and by the way, Anakin's on Mustafar. You're going to want to take care of that.
Well, and this is the interesting. Think about this. So if they everything happens like we said, you know, Anakin, in some ways, if he hangs up the lightsaber and raises his children, isn't he basically the father from Mortis? Isn't he fulfilling the destiny that he turned down?
Oof.
And, oof. And but now he's fulfilling it by not being a Jedi, but raising two children, you know, a son and a daughter, and teaching them the balance of the Force.
But teaching them the ways of the Force, but without the strictures of the Jedi.
Exactly. And right. And that's the thing I think that the new Jedi Order for Obi-Wan and Anakin and Ahsoka and all the rest would kind of come to understand is that there needs to be a different way, a different path.
And so the Jedi become more the way that I guess the fans imagined them before the prequels, where they're sort of like Ronin, where they're, you know, the samurai that have no real master. They just sort of, they're out there doing their thing, doing, you know, to borrow a phrase from one of my other favorite films, Pulp Fiction, you know, walk the earth like Kane from Kung Fu. You know, they go around righting wrongs, but there's no specific order to them.
I think that what I would see it more as is being, it would be a looser structure with more, more thought and care given to that each person is different. We can't just assume that you can train everyone exactly the same and that it will be the best for everyone. You know, that it's not just a cut and paste for every Jedi, that we need to spend the time to cultivate who that person is, what their strengths are, and be able to make allowances for those where there are weaknesses. And so, you know, there are rules, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be set in stone for everyone, no exceptions.
Right, but what if it's almost like a instead of like this big centralized order that's, you know, tied to the government and everything, it's almost like the Jedi all have a basic creed that they all go to, but if you go to certain sectors of the galaxy, what eventually springs up is the Jedi have adapted to that culture. You know, so the Jedi that is on that planet or in that sector or whatever, however you want to say it.
So kind of like they're Green Lanterns of the Star Wars galaxy, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah. Like they're the right ones for that place.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And at the same time, with that diversity of Jedi, you actually are better serving the people that you're near, you know, in the same way that the local church is better at handling the problems of that local area than just, you know, say the Catholic Church of, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't mean
Catholic as in the Catholic Church. I just meant like Catholic as in the word that means the entire
universal. Well, that was a philosophical thing that, Tolkien tried to work into his works was the idea of subsidiarity. And that's, you know, for Christianity, that's one of sort of the pinning principles is that, you know, you solve what you can in the family. If you can't solve it in the family, you solve it in the town. It's these concentric circles that go out so that instead of being like the Jedi who are this centralized authority, it's, you know, the larger group of Jedi only get involved when the smaller group of Jedi can't
handle what's going on.
Well,
and that's why, you know, there does have to be a central place for the Jedi to come back and share their experiences, and that's the way that the Order continues to grow, continues to evolve, you know, that there are always going to be core tenets to what it means to be a Jedi.
Right, exactly.
But there will always be ways in which the Jedi Constitution basically could be amended if it needs to be.
Commandment one, your lightsaber is, this weapon is your life.
Exactly. Don't lose it. This. oh, gosh. So, you know what I mean? I think that creates a really interesting, and I, gosh, it makes me think that the connection then to what we might see in 8 and 9 with Luke and where the Jedi Order is going to go. I think a lot of these questions and just kind of what we're raising here, gosh, wouldn't it be kind of cool to see some of that kind of play out somehow in the sequel trilogy?
I would love nothing more. It doesn't even need to be an episode. It could be in one of the anthology movies. I want to see some sort of idea that, you know, and in episode 7, they're the ones that raised it. He was looking for the first Jedi temple. I hope this becomes a thread of the studying of Jedi history so that we can, maybe they're trying to put a lens on what went wrong how to make it right in the future. Well, so,
and that's what made, I mean, just kind of what we just kind of beat through there and tried to come up with. It's so much fun because in a lot of ways, you got to think that that's what the story group has to be doing for these films. You know, where are we going to take this? What are we going to do with it? You know, because you can't just turn to George anymore and be like, so George, what happens next? You know, you have to come up with it yourself.
Yeah. Or you know, maybe the story group could come over and check us out on Twitter at the Jedi Masters and, you know, see the posts about these shows and they could listen to this delightful episode. And, you know, hey, we're here for you guys.
Yeah, we're here at the Jedi Masters. We're here on Join Nerd Party at Join Nerd
That's
Party.
Right.
You can also find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And, you know, John, we're all over iTunes with The Nerd Party. You can find all of our Nerd Party shows there. I mean, we've got so many great shows now to listen to. So make sure that you listen to each and every one. Fantastic just foray into geekdom in general. I mean, because we've got all the subjects covered.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, while you're at iTunes, hit us up with a star rating and review. That really does help with the show. And we really do appreciate all the people who have already given us those. And, you know, if we want to catch the story group's eye, we're going to need your help to do that by raising our level on iTunes with those star ratings and reviews.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the holiday season, so go ahead, give us a star rating review.
And whoop-dee-doo, dickery-dock, and don't
please
forget
don't do that to me.
To hang up your sock.
No. You might as well start singing Wonderful Christmas Time right now. That's just not going to happen.
Show, I was talking about the Honor of Majesty Secret Service with John Champion over there at the Mission Log Pod.
Yeah.
You could always... seeing how Christmas trees are grown from that movie. So,
oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah, I know.
That's right.
That could be our official Christmas song of aggressive negotiations.
That is gonna go on my Spotify playlist. I promise you that.
Okay.
But while
wow.
But while people are going around and they're connecting with Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party and facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where can they find you online, Matt?
Oh, man, you can find me on the Trek FM network. I'm doing a few shows there, doing Literary Treks with Bruce and Dan, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We get the opportunity a lot of times to interview the authors, talking about their latest works, so it's a lot of fun. Make sure you check that out. You can also find me on The Orb with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine. I do the General Geek show there called The 602 Club. You can find that as well as in iTunes, Star Wars, The 602 Club collection that just collects all the Star Wars episodes we've done there. So much great stuff over at the 602 Club. I hope you'll join us. It's a lot of fun. And I've just started writing the book reviews for the StarWarsReport.com.
Excellent.
So I just reviewed Catalyst, so be sure you check that out. I definitely think it's worth a read. I give it 2 thumbs way, way up before you see Rogue One. And also did the 602 Club. We talked about Catalyst as well, so be sure you check out that episode. I think everybody will really enjoy it. But John, I'm not the only one who's I would say prolific on the internet. You, my friend, are all over the place. So where can everybody find you?
Well, I'm nowhere near as ubiquitous as you are, Matt, but I will say that you can find me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice, and you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds, General Geek Show with my pal Craig. You can find me co-hosting Stage 9 over on the Trek FM network, exploring the work of Star Trek creators with Mike Schindler. And speaking of Mike Schindler, right here on the Nerd Party Network, I co-host a show with him called Great Shot Kid, which is all
don't
about
get cocky.
The work. Oh, hey, it is all about the work of Star Wars creators, and it is really, really a lot of fun. We talk about everything from the different film formats that the Star Wars movies have used to different movies that the directors have directed and written and all of those sorts of things. It's a lot of fun. So again, we have lots of places to reach out to us, but most importantly, just to stress again, go ahead, reach out to us on iTunes. Let us know that you're listening because it really does provide a great boost to the show. So we would appreciate it. And with all of that, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.